Section 7. The Two Truths. The Egolessness of All Dharmas. The Mahayana not only deepened the conception of the Buddha nature, but also developed doctrines which gave to the Dharma a profounder interpretation and a wider application than it had ever before received. On the theoretical side, its insistence that just as the composite was empty of selfhood, so were the components of the composite devoid of own being, made clear the Buddha's cognition of reality as expressed in his teaching of universal conditionality, while on the practical side its emphasis on the universality of the Bodhisattva ideal brought into bold relief the essential features of his conception of the spiritual life. Before embarking upon a brief exposition of these two outstanding doctrines, which are the most important of the distinctively Mahayana teachings concerning the second of the three jewels held in common by all schools of the Great Vehicle, it will be necessary to understand how the Mahayana could develop its own interpretation of the Dharma without altogether discarding that of the Hinayana. Hence, brief reference must first be made to its distinction between relative and absolute truth. This distinction had already been drawn by the Hinayana. According to the latter vehicle, there are two kinds of truth or two modes of expression, one of which is true in the ultimate sense, paramatta satcha, the other only in the conventional sense, sammuti satcha. To the Hinayanists, dharmas in the sense of the 165, so the Theravada, or the 72, thus the Savastivada, ultimate material and mental constituents of phenomena, are realities. For which reason, the only absolute true description of a phenomenon is the one that tells us of which dharmas it is composed and in what way these are interrelated. Expressions such as, the monk goes for alms, or he said he would do the work himself, are not true in the ultimate sense because the words monk and self do not refer to any correspondent realities. For the Hinayanists, the wheel, the axle, the linchpin, etc. are real, but the chariot is unreal. While descriptions of existence in terms of soul, self, ego, person, individual, etc. are valid only in the conventional sense, those which speak of it in terms of skandhas, ayatanas, and dhatus, or in terms of conditioned co-production or the four truths, are true in the ultimate sense. Hence, according to the Hinayana, by absolute truth, paramatta satcha, nothing else is meant but these and the other important doctrines of Buddhism. According to the Mahayana, on the other hand, since the so-called ultimate dharmas of the Hinayana arise in dependence on causes and conditions, they are not real but unreal by nature. This conditionality or unreality of all phenomena the Mahayanists indicate by the term shunyata, or emptiness. Doctrines such as the Four Truths and conditioned co-production, since they refer to unrealities, are themselves unreal in the ultimate sense, and whatever truth they possess is not absolute but only conventional. Shunyata, or tathata, is alone the absolute truth. For this reason, the Mahayanists relegated the whole of the doctrine to the domain of what the Madhyamikas called Samvritti Satya, conventional truth, or what the Yogacharins, again exhibiting their talent for elaboration, described as Parikalpita and Paratantra, illusory and contingent reality. Revolutionary though this development may seem, the Mahayana in fact does no more than give a metaphysical interpretation of the Buddha's parable of the raft. The Dharma is only a means. The answer to the question, what is the use of retaining doctrines such as the conditioned co-production and the four truths, if they are only relatively true, is therefore the same as the answer of what is the use of the raft, if we cannot take it with us after reaching the farther shore. Far from repudiating the doctrines of Buddhism, the Mahayanists retained them because, according to them, only by means of the conventional truth could the absolute truth be realized. The one was the stepping stone to the other. Moreover, the absolute truth indicated by the words shunyata and tathata, being unique, can be described only by means of an exhaustive series of negations. But in order to give a negative description, there must first of all be something to negate. This something is the conventional truth. The doctrines of Buddhism are necessary, even though not absolutely true, because only by means of the negation of these doctrines can the only possible definition of reality, namely a negative one, emerge. In this way, the Mahayanists were able to develop their own distinctive doctrines without repudiating those of the Hinayana. Without comprehending the Mahayana version of the two truths, full understanding of the relation between the two schools is impossible. The first of the distinctively Mahayana doctrines held in common by all schools of the Great Vehicle, namely that of the egolessness and emptiness of all things, Sarva Dharma Netraimaya and Sarva Dharma Shunyata, is closely connected with the doctrine of the two truths. We tried to show in Chapter 1 that the principle of universal conditionality, being the conceptual formulation of the Buddha's enlightenment, was the central teaching of Buddhism, the chief plank of that raft which is the Dharma, the one fundamental doctrine whence all other doctrines are derived, and to which they may all be reduced. Even Nirvana, as the last of the series of causal stages wherein factors of the same kind progressively augment each other, falls within its scope. The four truths are the product of its application to the problem of suffering. And for what reason is the so-called person, Pudgala, said to be devoid of selfhood, Anatman? Simply because in it there can be found no element, either material or mental, which does not arise in dependence on causes and conditions external to itself. Obviously, the flesh is more than raiment, and an understanding of the principle of universal conditionality of far greater moment to the spiritual life than an understanding of any of its specific applications, however important or interesting these might be, in the form of one or another of the doctrines of Buddhism. But this truth the Hinayanists speedily forgot. Neglecting the general principle, they directed their attention almost exclusively to that one among its numerous specific applications in which they were most deeply interested, the doctrine of the egolessness of the so-called individual. Pudgala Nairaitamaya. As a result of their marked preference for the psychological circumference rather than the metaphysical centre of the Dharma, they eventually promulgated two doctrines, both of which were in fact a denial of the spirit of the original teaching, as well as fruitful sources of further misunderstanding and error. According to the first, the realisation of Pudgala Nairatmaya, by means of a thoroughgoing analysis of the so-called self or Atman into its constituent dharmas, is by itself sufficient to bring about the attainment of nirvana. According to the second, the dharmas into which the self disintegrates when properly analysed constitute a definite limited number of ultimately real entities. These entities, technically known as Samskrita dharmas, are recognisable by such signs, nimitta, as painfulness and impurity. Nirvana, the Amskrita Dharma, is however devoid of such signs, animitta. It is a state of purity and bliss. One attains enlightenment by gradually detaching the mind from the conditioned and directing it towards the unconditioned. Thus the dharmas constituting personality being real, the signs of such dharmas were real. Signs being real, the absence of signs was also real. Both signs and absence of signs being real, the difference between nirvana and samsara was a real difference, and hence abandonment of the one and attainment of the other was a real abandonment and real attainment. Against these dualistic views, which obviously point in the direction of spiritual individualism and egoism, the Mahayanists entered an emphatic protest in the form of their doctrine of Sarvadharma Shunyata, or the emptiness of all dharmas whatsoever, which was in effect a reassertion of the primacy of the principle of universal conditionality over its applications and a reminder of the relativity of all conceptual formulations. According to this doctrine, the five skandhas, the 12 ayatanas, and the 18 dhatus, together with their various subdivisions into which the Hinayanists had so laboriously and elaborately analysed the so-called person, were not ultimate realities at all, but only mental constructions. As was pointed out in the course of our discussion of the two kinds of truth, the dharmas constituting personality arise in dependence on causes and conditions. To be dependent means to be devoid of self-nature or own being, svabhava. What is devoid of self-nature is said to be empty, shunya. Conditionality and emptiness are the same thing. A conditioned dharma is therefore an empty dharma. So much indeed even the Hinayanists admitted. But the Mahayanists, starting from the Hinayanic distinction between Samskrita and Asamskrita dharmas, the one possessing nimittas, the others devoid of them, went on to draw conclusions which horrified their opponents. They pointed out that negation was unthinkable without affirmation, and that the one was therefore dependent on the other. That which is devoid of all signs, as it were, bounded on one side by that which possesses signs. Nirvana therefore exists only in relation to samsara. Being relative, it is dependent. Since it is dependent, it is conditioned, and because it is conditioned, it must be regarded as empty. Having thus equated dharmas with emptiness on the one hand and nirvana with emptiness on the other, the Mahayanists now took the even bolder step of equating nirvana with samsara. If A and B both equal C, then obviously A and B must themselves be equal. This daring identification of the world of phenomena with the absolute is one of the most important and fruitful theses of the Mahayana. Besides contributing to the formation of still profounder philosophical conceptions, it is the foundation of the Prajnaparamita logic of contradictions, which asserts the identity of affirmation and negation, as well as the ultimate justification and explanation of a great deal of later tantric theory and practice, particularly in the field of meditation and morals. But perhaps the most striking consequence of the principle of universal emptiness was its application to the Mahayana conception of spiritual life, particularly as formulated in the Bodhisattva ideal. All things, conditioned or unconditioned, being empty and therefore non-different from each other, advaya, the Mahayanists were able to assert not only the emptiness of all dharmas, sarva dharma shunyata, but also, more positively, the sameness of all dharmas, sarva dharma samata. Since all things are in reality the same, and since any discrimination between nirvana and samsara is therefore a delusion, it necessarily follows that in the ultimate sense there can be neither abandonment of the one nor attainment of the other. For this reason, the Mahayana conception of enlightenment differs radically from that of the Hinayana. Whereas the latter tends to think of it as involving a real transition, though not of a real person, as at least Buddha Ghosha was acute enough to point out, from a real samsara to a real nirvana. For the former, it consists in the absolute cessation of all such discriminations and the realization that undifferentiated and homogeneous emptiness, suchness, sameness, or consciousness, as it may be variously denominated, is the sole reality. Even this realization is, of course, a non-realization, and only because it is a non-realization is it a realization. Similarly, it would be a mistake to think of emptiness as constituting the self-nature or own being of dharmas, for there would then be no difference between the Buddhist doctrine of emptiness on the one hand and conceptions such as the Nirguna Brahman of Shankara or the substance of Spinoza on the other. All things are empty, therefore emptiness is itself empty and is not to be thought of as being in reality a sort of stuff or substance out of which dharmas have been manufactured, and to which they can again be reduced, like pots to clay, much less still as a sort of substratum, which somehow stands underneath things and holds them up. When the Prajnaparamita texts declare that the Bodhisattva takes emptiness for the basis, what they really mean is that he takes nothing whatever, conditioned or unconditioned, as his basis. Consequently, there is in reality not only no attainment of nirvana, but even no aspiration towards that attainment. Realizing that all dharmas are eternally unproduced and that all beings are from the very beginning the Buddha, the Bodhisattva remains in a state of profound quiescence, of absolute tranquility and purity, undisturbed by dualistic concepts. But the absolute truth can be realized only by means of the truth conventional. At the same time, therefore, that he courses in the idea of non-attainment or in emptiness, the Bodhisattva makes strenuous efforts for the attainment of enlightenment through the practice of the 10 perfections and the fulfillment of the various other duties of the Bodhisattva. Indeed, if he is to avoid setting up a dualist conception of non-attainment, he must so practice. Non-attainment is not different from attainment. If it were, the doctrine of the absolute quiescence of all dharmas would lead, in practice, to some sort of quietism, which it has never done. On the contrary, it has ever inculcated an ideal of compassionate activity, unparalleled in the history of religions. But the basis of this intensely active compassion, it should be remembered, is not any mundane, and therefore at bottom egoistic, humanitarian ideal, but the realization that all dharmas, including the so-called objects of compassion, are fundamentally empty and therefore unreal. Such a conception of the spiritual life is poles apart from the starchy individualism of the Hinayana. Yet, great though the difference between spiritual egoism and transcendental altruism undoubtedly is, it is not so deep or so wide that it cannot be bridged over by the still greater latitude of Mahayana. The path to enlightenment, in the Mahayanic sense of the term, to be truly comprehensive, must include all stages and degrees of the spiritual life, from the lowest to the highest. Even individualism must find a place. Consequently, just as on the theoretical side the Mahayanists had been able to include the Hinayana teachings in their own by means of the doctrine of the two truths, so on the practical side were they able to include the spiritual ideal of the Hinayana, as well as its insight and attainment, by the simple expedient of dividing the stages of the Bodhisattva's career into two series, a higher and a lower. This division is reflected in several schemes of spiritual practice. The meditation on emptiness, for example, is divided into five stages. In the first, the Bodhisattva realizes the emptiness of dharmas. In the second, the emptiness of conditioned dharmas. And in the third, the emptiness of those dharmas which are unconditioned. These stages belong to the Hinayana. In the fourth stage, he realizes the absolute emptiness of all dharmas whatsoever. In the fifth, even the conception of emptiness is transcended, so that here nothing can be said. These two stages belong exclusively to the Mahayana. Again, the 10 stages of the Bodhisattva's career are divided into two series, one consisting of stages 1 to 6, the other of stages 7 to 10. The first series corresponds to the first, second and third stages of the meditation on emptiness, while the second series corresponds to the fourth and fifth stages. That is to say, one is Hinayanic and the other Mahayanic, although both belong to the Mahayana in the sense that the Bodhisattva is required to pass through both in the course of his career. According to the more developed and more truly orthodox teaching, the face of reality is doubly veiled. Behind the outer veil, avarana, of passions, klesha, is the inner veil of ignorance, the veil obstructing true knowledge, jnaya. While admitting that the Hinayanists succeed in removing the first veil by means of the realization of pudgala nairatmaya, or egolessness of the so-called person, the Mahayanists maintain that the second could be removed only by means of the realization of sarva dhamma Nairatmaya, or Sarvadharma Shunyata, the egolessness and emptiness of all things whatsoever. In the sixth stage, the last of those constituting the lower series of stages of the Bodhisattva path, the Arhat, having by the practice of the first three meditations on emptiness destroyed his passions and realized the egolessness of personality, attains nirvana in the Hinayanic sense. The Bodhisattva, however, rejecting individual emancipation, passes on to the higher series of stages, in the fourth and last of which, having by means of the last two meditations on emptiness destroyed his ignorance and realized the truth of universal emptiness, he attains Sambodhi, or full enlightenment, or, in other words, becomes a perfect Buddha. Thus were the Mahayanists able to accommodate Hinayana individualism as an intermediate stage of the Mahayanic path of transcendental altruism. This in effect meant that the possibility of passing from the lower to the higher series was recognized, so that, according to some texts, the sixth stage could be transcended not only by one who had accepted the bodhisattvic ideal from the very beginning, but also by a sravaka who, after realizing nirvana in the Hinayanic sense, discovered his mistake and saw that the attainment that he had hitherto believed to be ultimate was in fact not so. The Saddhamma Pundarika Sutra represents Sariputra, who in Mahayana texts often stands for the Hinayana point of view, as making this discovery. Having heard the Buddha tell the assembled arhats, bodhisattvas, gods and demigods, "Rejoice greatly in your hearts, knowing that you will become Buddhas," the great disciple reproaches himself for having been a follower of the Hinayana and for having imagined that he had attained nirvana, when real nirvana was not that of the arhats, but that of the Buddhas. The Tathagata then predicts that after infinite, boundless, inconceivable kalpas have passed away, Sariputra will become a Buddha named Flower Light, and that his Buddha domain will be called undefiled. Since the Mahayana held that both the Hinayana and the Mahayana scriptures were preached by the Buddha, the Saddhamma Pundarika has to give some explanation of the discrepancy between them, and that it proceeds to do by means of a variety of parables, one of which, the parable of the burning house, was quoted in section 3. But now that we no longer regard the Mahayana sutras in their present literary form as the direct utterance of the Buddha, such explanations are no longer necessary. The Shariputra of the Saddhamma Pundarika is not a historical but a symbolical figure. He represents the literal, individualistic and negative interpretations of the Dharma popular in Hinayana circles at the time of the rise of the Mahayana. He does not represent the original teaching as preserved at least partially in the Pali Canon of the Theravadins as it exists today. For there is no doubt that the historical Shariputra was, like the rest of his Arhat brethren, no less enlightened than Nagarjuna himself. Only later did the Arhat ideal harden into a doctrine of spiritual individualism. Just as the Mahayana criticism of the Hinayana applies not to the original teaching, but to corruptions of the original teaching, so does its relegation of the Hinayanic Nirvana to the sixth stage of the Bodhisattva's career refer not to the nirvana of the Buddha's own arhat disciples, but to the individualistic conceptions of later Hinayana scholasticism. Once again, the Mahayana teachings are more concordant with those of the earliest portions of the Pali Canon than is generally imagined. The second of the distinctively Mahayana doctrines held in common by all schools of the Great Vehicle, namely the Bodhisattva ideal, is not only the result of a process of development and universalization similar to what happened in the case of the first, the doctrine of conditionality, but, as it were, its translation into terms of human life and spiritual action. However, since the Bodhisattva doctrine will be outlined in Chapter 4, all that needs to be done now is to record the fact of its importance and pass on. One point only need be borne in mind. Whereas to the Hinayanists the term Bodhisattva means simply Gautama Buddha in the period prior to his enlightenment, the Mahayanists apply it to any Buddhist devotee who accepts as his ultimate goal not individual emancipation, but full enlightenment for the sake of all sentient beings. This distinction may in part explain what follows.